Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Welcome back again to this episode of the Alive to Love, No BS Bishop. I am here to love. I am not here for lesser values. I believe that being alive to love is the center of my universe. I'm going to live it right there for all my days. Alive to love. I will not serve you BS. I will serve you love as much as I know how and in as many ways as I can express it. That's why we're here. For the No BS Bishop, this is my opportunity to invite you for a half an hour of counsel, a half an hour of giving you some advice, probably the kind of counsel you would hope for in a desperate situation, but most likely a kind of counsel you need just to get up in the morning and go about your daily chores in life. I have almost 50 years of pastoral experience, and in that time, I've counseled hundreds of people, and I'm welcoming you to join me in my pastoral study. Pull up a chair, get comfortable, get a cup of coffee, and allow me the opportunity to speak into your life about life's number one highest value, love. And without love, all other values easily devolve, slide into the bait-and-switch manipulation that is all too often offered, even in the name of Christ, even in the name of church, even in the name of spirituality. I refuse it. I refute it. I will not live in that kind of miserable dysfunction. Love alone is credible. Love alone has the power to seize our mental illnesses, our physical illnesses, our spiritual illnesses, and create for us a life worth living. So pull up that chair, get comfortable, and let's talk. Let's have a visit for a few moments. I'm inclined today. I usually try to give you some kind of list that can be practical. I'm not so much in that mood today. I want to talk. I want to give you some slices of my heart. Like Janis Joplin said, I want you to take another little piece of my heart, baby. I want you to listen to who Randy Dean is and why I even dare to say that love alone is the value that keeps life stable. Love alone is the value that ought to be the voice of the church. It ought to be the voice of authentic spirituality. Love alone and any lesser things just become these crowbar ideas of how to shame people, how to put fear in people. If we can just preach hellfire and brimstone, people will get back to church. Well, no, they won't. No, they won't. They're running away from church because we're preaching hellfire and brimstone. They're running away because they've grown weary of the fear-mongering. They've grown weary of being shamed and manipulated. So why do I have this ongoing passion about love? Why am I so wrapped up in it? Well, I'm going to tell you a little more of my story. I've told pieces of it here and there over the last few years on this broadcast, but I want to tell you a little more. So get comfortable. Allow me to share my heart. Why is this coming from me so often? I want to remind people as well, I'm no perfectionist at love. In fact, I refute being a perfectionist at anything because that's a driving force. It's not a motivating force. But I'm no perfect professor of love. I'm a pilgrim on a journey of love. I'm climbing a mountain. I'm walking a path. I'm running a race, and that race is called love. I don't do it perfectly, and if you expect me to love you perfectly, I'm going to disappoint you, and I'll tell you that straight up. But I do want you to know I'm going to give you every effort I have at my disposal to love appropriately, to love with a valid sense of connectivity to you. I promise you, if I make a mistake, it's going to be a mistake toward love. So there I am. And here's how it began with me. You know, many years ago, it's been actually 10 years ago, I wrote a book. It's called Radiance. If we're the light of the world, why is everything so dark? You can find it on Amazon. You can Google it. It's readily available online. Or you could contact me. The information to contact me is at the head of this broadcast and at the conclusion. My wife shares that with you. Be happy to send you an autographed book that I wrote 10 years ago. Somebody asked me one time, how long did it take you to write that book? And I said, oh, only about 40 years, because it was an accumulation at that point of a lot of life experiences. And in chapter 14, page 119 of my book, and if you got a copy, you might want to open up and look at it. It's a story about me and how I came to real honest faith based on being loved. Here it is. The title of the chapter is Unarmed Truth and Unconditional Love. Martin Luther King Jr. said, I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. I could write the book, The Idiot's Guide for Coming to Christ. I didn't have a choir singing just as I am, and there were no counselors waiting with nice smiles and clever gospel tracts in hands. There were no heads bowed, no eyes closed, no seeker-sensitive bait and switch. Yeah, there's that BS stuff. Set up to lure me in. I hated church. I hated Christians. I hated their thinly veiled attempts to witness to me. I hated my mom and dad's new faith. I hated life, but I especially hated me. Hate. Pure, raw, real hate. Just as I was between drinking binges at 16, too cowardly to shoot myself or slice my wrists, but not too cowardly to drive my dad's Cadillac up a hill at 100 miles an hour on the wrong side of the road, just to hear my carload of friends screaming for mercy and cursing me. I'll always wonder who it was I almost killed on the other side of that hill, on that car that met us at the top of that hill. I simply took the left-hand ditch at the very last moment. The beginning of the end came one night when, in the black cloud of my misery, I was running my head into the walls of my bedroom. That's right. I was literally ramming my skull as hard as I could into the walls, hoping to cause an injury bad enough to kill me. You know, these many years later, some people close to me now might explain that, oh, that explains a few things about Randy Dean. But I digress. My insanity at that time was based in the lie I had internally authorized, and I was speaking out between those thumps on the wall. I cried out, nobody loves me. I fell asleep, or more accurately, slipped into unconsciousness that night, simply sobbing those words into my pillow, nobody loves me. I think it was the next day or so that an old German man from the church my parents were attending came to our home. He parked his old Volvo a block away because he knew I knew his car, and I would not come home if I saw that car parked in our driveway. He sat and waited patiently for me to come home that night because he told my mother he had had a dream about me the night before. He didn't tell her what it was. When I walked in the door and I saw him sitting in my house, I cursed under my breath. With a thick German accent that he had, he said, "Sit down." Honestly, my knees buckled and I sat. He choked with his own emotion and cried and continued, I had a dream about you last night. I saw you crying and saying, nobody loves me. But God told me to come here tonight and to tell you, He loves you and I love you. I was transfixed. I thought for a moment I was leaving my body. I remember telling myself, just keep breathing, Randy. Don't pass out. Don't pass out. And whatever you do, don't cry. I couldn't speak. I watched helplessly as he came across the room and he laid hands on me, anointing me with oil, and then left me to ponder what had just happened. I didn't pray the sinner's prayer that night, or any night for that matter, but I knew something strange had happened to me, and it wasn't going to go away. There was a radiance in that room, and I have spent my life from that moment till this running toward and leaping into the arms of that radiant God. More importantly still, all of the above that's written leads me to this moment for everybody reading this and, by the way, now hearing this right now. Gather yourself for a moment of clarity and focus and drink these transcendent words into your soul. God says to you right now, in this crease of eternity, my child, I love you. He told me to tell you that. Oh, yes, he did. Whoever you are, whenever you're reading this, and by the way, now hearing this on this radio broadcast, God is looking back at you and speaking those words into your own reality. Heaven is merging with you, and you are being irresistibly seized. God says, you there, hearing this radio broadcast, reading this page, you right there, I love you. Now I'm saying, put the book down, or turn the radio off for a moment, and bask in this radiance in the place where you're sitting right now. Maybe you shouldn't, by the way, turn the radio off, because then you can't hear me. All right, back to the book. Long ago, before Christendom had the habit of overusing the term born again, being saved, quote unquote, meant something far more transcendent and beautiful. In his book, The Relentless Tenderness of Jesus, Brennan Manning says, a century ago in the Deep South, the words used to describe the breakthrough into personal relationship with Jesus and with God were, quote, I was seized by the power of a great affection. Well, right now I'm being obedient to a heavenly vision to use this venue to say that we all need to be seized again and again for the restoration of an authentic faith and a radiant life. In too many ways, Christianity today has become a system, a thing, just brick and mortar, and it doesn't seize lives as it could and it should. That could change even in this very moment. There it is again. Can you hear it? God's voice. That's from my book, Radiance. Just a few pages there on unconditional love, unarmed truth and unconditional love, from the quote by Martin Luther King Jr. when he said, I believe that unconditional love and unarmed truth will have the final say in reality. People ask me sometimes, well, what's going to happen in the end and the judgment? What will happen? What will God do? What will God do with people that didn't go to church? What will God do with people that have been living in some kind of rebellion? Well, my answer is this. We will all meet a God whose character is rooted in the reality that God is love. Perfect love will cast out fear. Perfect love casts out fear in everyday practical life. But in the end of all things, at what we've come to call the great judgment, love will cast out all fear. It'll be a driving, powerful nuclear force like nothing we've ever seen before. Now, I told you at the beginning of this, I wanted to be very personal with you today, and I wanted to give you slices of my story to help you understand that I'm not here just trying to be the professor of love or some kind of bishop, high-minded sounding love teacher. I do want to teach, but I don't want to be high-minded. I don't want to be a know-it-all about love, because I don't know it all. I know enough. And as you just read from or heard from my book as I read it, I know enough to know that it will be love that will transform us. And see what I said in my book, and it's true to this day. This is, my goodness, well over 50 years later, I'm still running after that love that met me that day when that German visitation, he was called a visitation pastor from our church. That German fellow who had, by the way, he had been a veteran in World War II as a Nazi, but he had met the love of God and it changed his heart and life. This guy, his name was Paul. This guy was with a thick German accent, just had a dream about me. I can't explain that. I can no more explain that than how I could give you the theory of relativity in three simple words. It's not possible. But I know it's true, and I know what happened to me in that moment changed my life forever. I wasn't afraid of hell. I was living in hell. I wasn't afraid of whether I died or not. In fact, I was trying to die. I wanted out of my living misery. And I know that many people listening to me right now are in a living misery. And I'm challenging you now to just listen to me now. I came to this radio broadcast with a real urgent sense that I should just give you my story. And here's my story. Love lifted me. Love grabbed me by the heart and pulled me up to a mountaintop and said, now, view the universe from the vista of love. See all people. See yourself. See your family. See your friends. See the pain and hatred. See the tumultuous confusion of our world, and see it through the eyes of love. No longer let your life be driven by shame, pain, or fear. Now let your life be drawn into an ever-increasing radiance of love. Some time ago, I did tell you the story about how when I was 18, and I had actually, I may have been a little older, might between 18 and 19, I just begun college. I was going to a Bible college. I was so clueless. Seriously, folks. But I was reaching into this pursuit of love, this pursuit of this spirituality I had just begun, and my dad fell very gravely ill at the time, and so I flew home quickly to be at my father's side, and was there for a better part of a month. In fact, I considered dropping out of Bible college because things were so dire. But he pulled out of a coma that he was in, and he called my mom and said, "Make sure you have Randy come up to see me tonight. I want to say something to Randy." And she said, "Oh, I'll bring him." And he said, "No, I don't want anybody else in the hospital room except just him and me. I want to see my son tonight. Just please tell him to come up to the hospital room." Well, Mom told me, "Your dad wants to see you, and here's the car keys." And I thought, oh my, he's found out something about me. You know, he's found out that I nearly destroyed his beloved Cadillac, his 68 Coupe de Ville. I thought, oh boy, here it comes. He's gonna drop the other shoe, and he's gonna cuss me. He's gonna let me know what a rotten kid I've been, and boy, I better get this Bible school thing down. I better get my butt back to school and behave. You know, I just had all kinds of thoughts about how he was just gonna lay into me from that hospital bed. So I went, and I had myself braced for a chewing out. I had myself braced for him saying, "Look, don't let me die and see you mess your life up." So I went up to the hospital room. My palms were sweaty, and I walked into the room, and there was Dad. And he was, you know, for what it was in the 70s, it was a pretty extensive medical procedure had been done on him, and he was on all kinds of machines and monitors, but he was able to speak weakly, and he motioned to me to come close to his bedside, and so I was braced. I thought, well, here we go. He's gonna give it to me straight, and it's gonna hurt. And he just looked at me very tenderly. This big 300-pound Irishman who was at that time he was 68, and he was weakened to the point of death. And he said, "You know, I realize that at the age of 18, I've not done a good job being your father. So I realize there's one thing in particular I have never said to you." And I was stunned. There was a lump in my throat. I couldn't speak. And he said, "Son, I want you to know one thing. I love you. And I know I've never told you that to this point, but I do. I love you." Well, once again, now this was a few years after that initial experience I had with that visitation pastor who came to say, "God says I love you and I love you." And I didn't know then why it struck me so hard. And I was standing there at my dad's hospital bed realizing, oh my gosh, here it is again. I just feel like I'm leaving my body. I'm going to pass out. And if I speak, I'm just going to sob. And honestly, at this moment right now, I couldn't tell you what it was I even said at that moment. I probably said, "Oh, sure, Dad," or "Thanks, Dad," or something. I probably just filled the air with something because I felt like, you know, I got to say or do something. But on the inside of me, there was a raging tumult of, oh my gosh, what is this? What's happening to me? Well, what was happening to me was I was encountering love in an authentic and powerful and genuine and vulnerable way, a love that I hadn't really been able to assimilate why things were so messed up in me. And sure, at that point, I was in Bible college, and sure, at that point, I was pursuing what was going on in me spiritually, and I was trying to figure out life as an 18, 19-year-old boy, but I did not know that the absence of powerful and real affection and love, especially from my father, was just largely not there. And it really, really did, as you can imagine. It just hit me like a fast pitch from a professional baseball pitcher. It hit me right in the heart. And so I realized from that day till this that one of the things every human being on the planet, both past, present, and future, every human being must have an encounter with unconditional unconditional love, unarmed truth and unconditional love. In this life, we all are crying out, who loves me? Some of us, like myself in my early story of running my head into a wall, nobody loves me. Somebody out there right now listening to this is saying, well, nobody loves me. What is going on? Why can't I just have an honest love that hits my heart? And I'm here to tell you, God has sent me to this radio broadcast. God has created this venue for me with the No BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. God has given me this opportunity through WPCA and through their giving me this microphone and this weekly broadcast. I'm here to say to you who are listening right now, stop what you're doing. Just be still for a few moments. Give me 1 minute of your time to just look you through the radio or through your computer, whatever, however you're listening to this, give me an opportunity to say, you right there, I love you. God loves you. And this love is so surpassingly magnificent that it'll set you on course for the rest of your life, as it has for me. I'm half a century later, I'm still running toward the love that was revealed to me when I was just a boy in high school and a boy in Bible college. A love that impacted me like an asteroid splashing down in the ocean. It exploded in me, and it's still explosive in me. It still brings me to tears. It still moves me beyond words that I can adequately express. It still motivates me in the morning. It still says to me, you know, whatever you do today in your tasks as a bishop, as a pastor, as a human being, I have a part-time job distributing food to senior citizens through a community action program. I bring 600 boxes to 600 clients across the region here in western Wisconsin. And what I know is this: I can't do great things, but I can do small things with great love. Mother Teresa said that. We can't do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Listen to me, folks. Life is not about building the biggest building, having the most money amassed. It's not about what kind of power you can accumulate politically. It's not about how big your church is. It's not about how many butts were in your pews on a Sunday morning. It's not even about how fancy and nice a home you have or good a car you got. Life is about love, because love is the only credible value in the human experience. So every week I come here in the No BS Bishop, I'm alive to love, and I tell you, all lesser values simply fall into the pit of manipulation. All, if we start from any other value, I don't care how right the value may be, it just slides into other issues, the gravitational pull of other values. And sure, the value might be, hey, I got to get this guy in my church. Or, hey, I got to make sure this person prays the sinner's prayer. Oh, those are all fine and good, but they will end up being manipulative if there is not a surpassing, transcendent love, a radiant love that is real. You see, that story I told you from that German visitation pastor, you know, my feet were determined to run out of that room if he started in, get me in church. I would have cussed him and thrown something at him and run out the door, because I hated church. Remember what I said? But because that guy came to me with a surpassing, transcendent love, it froze me in my tracks. It stopped me from being a rebellious, mouthy little jerk, and it sat me in a chair, left to wonder for the rest of my life what just happened to me. That story about coming to my dad in his hospital room that night, it untangled so many things that were messed up in me. Why was I feeling what I was feeling? I was missing love. So let's close the broadcast as we do every time. And that is, first of all, I want you to breathe deeply. Remember what I said in my story? I was talking to myself as a 16-year-old brat. Inside, I was saying, just breathe, Randy. Don't pass out. Don't pass out. Even then, I knew it's important to keep breathing. So I'm asking you, just breathe with me. Breathe deep on the count of three. One, two, three. Breathe in. Hold it. And breathe out. What I'm simply trying to tell you is just breathe. If all you know to do is just breathe, sometimes that's the finest thing you can do to calm yourself. And then the second thing is, hear me when I say it again. I love you. Find somebody and say those three powerful, majestic, magic, charmed words and say them with full intentionality. Say it to whoever's nearest you. If you just got your little dog in your lap, just look at him and say, I love you. The giving of those words, the receiving of those words is life-changing. Like Brennan Manning said about in the Deep South before born again or being saved were terms that we overused. He said, we used to say, I was seized by the power of a great affection. Oh my, we're so ready, aren't we, in our day and time to be seized again and again and again by the power of a great affection. Our cars have not been matching our need, our homes, our money, our bank accounts, our careers, none of it is meeting that crying, gaping hole inside of us that's crying out for love. So today I'm here to tell you, I love you. Now get up and do something beautiful in this old world where it's full of ugly and lovelessness, and be sure that what you do is so beautiful it rises to the pinnacle of love. I'm Bishop Randy Dean. It's been a pleasure to be with you again for this episode of the No BS Bishop. I'm Alive to Love. Peace, and go out there and make this a loving, transcendent day.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.